Of course. Sorry, none at all. I did say it would be gradual, if you remember. He raised his eyebrows, but sometimes things come up unbidden, and if they did, and I felt she was comfortable, I would guide her through whatever it was. I just won't push her.
The psychologist looked at Nicky.
Do you have anything more for me on Avril Hammond?
Not as yet, but we are now operating with a full complement of officers, so I hope we'll have something soon. I'll let you have everything as it comes in. She told him briefly about the forensic results that had tied the cases together. The doctor was just explaining the difficulty of proving that someone had actually driven another person to suicide when Sally King and her friend came in. Sally looked excited and apprehensive, but Richard soon put her at her ease. After a brief conversation, he asked her to lie back on the couch. Nicky and Julia sat at the back of the room, out of Sally's sight.
Now, I'm just going to pull the curtain, Sally, like last time. It won't be completely dark. We're just shutting out the daylight glare.
Quiet, soothing music was soon heard playing in the background.
Now, watch the light wheel and I'll talk you down. Don't forget, I am someone who wishes to help you. All I am doing is showing you a way to activate inner resources that are impossible to reach in your day-to-day life. You are not asleep or unconscious, and you can still speak lucidly. You're in a trance state, somewhere between sleep and wakefulness, a place where you can access a deeper level of awareness. Now, just watch the light source.
Nicky tried to avoid watching the gently rotating color wheel. It was all she could do not to fall asleep just listening to Richard's deep, melodic voice. Julia, the other counselor, was obviously feeling the same. Nicky noticed her digging a fingernail into the palm of her hand. The session continued for almost 20 minutes, and Sally had remained relaxed throughout. Nicky was just beginning to think that she should have waited until the next session, when Sally started to move uncomfortably on the couch. Her fingers twisted together. Her face lost its peaceful expression and began to contort with anxiety.
"Everything is all right, Sally. You are safe. No one can hurt you."
Richard's calm voice seemed to relax her again.
"Where are you, Sally? Describe to me where you are."
"We are going to visit Grandad. The children have asked to see him. We are approaching the village."
"Is your husband with you? Are you enjoying yourselves?"
Richard prompted.
"My husband is driving."
Sally's voice had a strange, flat quality to it.
"The children are singing. So is my husband."
"Are you singing with them?"
"No. I don't feel like singing."
"Do you want to see your father?"
"No. I don't want to go into the village."
"Now, Sally, remember that you are safe with me, and nothing you remember about that time can hurt you now. Do you understand that?"
"Yes. I understand."
"Why don't you want to go into the village?"
"Because there is only one road to my father's house."
"And what is wrong with the road?"
"It goes past..."
Sally swallowed several times, and she began breathing faster. Richard calmed her again, and then told her to move forward an hour and tell him what the children were doing. When she answered, she seemed more controlled and lay still again.
"They are playing in the rowing boat."
She smiled fondly. "Dad has an old boat in the back garden. He's painted it bright colours, and sometimes in the summer he puts pots of geraniums and begonias in it. It's empty now, and the children are rowing to America." Nicky was dredging through her memory of Quentin Odyke's geography. Bert Gilmore's cottage was at the end of a winding lane that led towards the marsh. To reach it, you had to travel for about 500 yards down the main road, then take the drove road before pulling off into the lane leading to Sally's father's house. She could recall several cottages, a farm and some wasteland. Other than that, it was field after field until you reached the marsh itself. She made a mental note to ask Yvonne, who lived along that particular route. Richard was talking again, and Nicky realized that he was getting Sally and her family into the car to go home. Immediately, Sally tensed, and by the time he had closed the car doors and turned on the engine, she was fighting for breath. With a concerned glance at Nicky and Julia, Richard moved Sally forward again, to the moment when she was putting the children to bed that night. In seconds, she was laughing, splashing imaginary water onto two giggling children, and holding up an invisible towel to rub and cuddle them dry. Then Richard Foley brought her back. Sally stretched and blinked.
"Oh, that was lovely. I feel so refreshed.
I could have stayed there for hours. She smiled at the hypnotherapist. It's better than a night's sleep. He passed her a glass of water and she drank thirstily. I hope I didn't say anything I shouldn't.
Not at all, Sally. We just spent some time with you and your family. Now, just rest for a moment or two, and I'll go and get my diary so we can make our next appointment.
Julia walked over to Sally, smiled down at her and took her hand. You feeling okay after that?
Brilliant, Julia. It really is a pleasant experience. I can't think why I was so apprehensive.
Richard appeared from his tiny office with a diary and a broad smile.
Fear of the unknown, that's all. Now each time you visit, you'll be more relaxed and open to sharing your memories with me. When are you free next week?
Nicky was anxious. This was taking too long. There was a psychopath on the loose. They did not have unlimited time, and she could not watch Sally 24 hours a day. If the killer got the slightest idea of what she was attempting to do, then Sally had effectively signed her own death sentence. She waited until the two women had left, then followed Richard Foley back into his office.
This is really bothering me, Richard. Mrs. King is in very real danger. If this bloody murderer gets the faintest whiff of what's going on, Sally King's loving husband and kids could be down at the florist ordering a wreath by next Tuesday.
Nicky, I'm sorry, but I can't rush her. You saw her. If I make her confront the traumas of her past too soon, the same husband and kids could be drawing up a visiting rota for the psychiatric hospital. And that would be my fault. I have signed a pledge, Nicky, a code of ethics.
His voice softened.
I know she is in danger, as are others until you catch the killer, and I will do everything in my power to help. But it cannot be rushed. This treatment is delicate in the extreme, and I have to deal with it appropriately, okay?
Nicky pushed her hair away from her face. I'm sorry, Richard. I do understand what you are saying, but we don't know where the threat will come from. We have no idea what the killer looks like, and no real proof that it is even a woman. I've got a bag full of Greenborough deaths to sort out, and bugger all leaves. I'm frightened that the killer is here among us, and although I'm doing my level best to keep these sessions quiet, well... She shrugged. By now we usually have photo fits on the TV and in all the papers. Have you seen this man and all that stuff? And what have I got? A supposedly slaughtered child has risen from her watery grave on the marsh and is avenging her stolen childhood. Great!
Richard smiled apologetically. I'm sorry I can't do more. But if it's any consolation, from what you've told me, I think you are perfectly correct in your assumptions. Avril Hammond would have been more than capable of killing her father, and anyone else for that matter.
He glanced at his watch. I promise, as soon as Sally is anywhere near ready, I will regress her into whatever in the past is frightening her so much.
Let's just hope it's all worth it.
She really does want to do it, and it's all I have at present.
The doctor held open the door for her.
Then she's already given you a start. Find out who lived on the stretch of road between the outskirts of the village and her father's house.
Believe me, that's my first assignment. Thanks, Richard. We'll speak soon.
Nicky stepped out, and then looked back at him.
I'm sorry to be so impatient with you. It's called damage limitation. I've been in too many situations where you're horribly aware that something nasty might happen, and in my experience it usually does. I just want Sally King to live to see her great-grandchildren.
That is my greatest wish too, Nicky. But I also want her to be sane enough to recognize them.
Yvonne, got a moment before you go home,
Nicky said.
Yvonne pulled her jacket from the back of her chair.
Certainly, Mum. What's the problem?
Quintin Ordyke, do you remember who lived where back in the 70s and 80s?
More or less, Mum.
Nicky told her of the strange change in Sally's emotions when she spoke of the drive into the village.
Well, that's simple. The Hammond cottage was off that road, just before you turn into the Gilmore's Lane.
Oh, but I didn't see it when we were out visiting Dr. Draper.
You wouldn't, Mum. All that's left is a plot of waste ground. Our delightful residents burnt it to the ground just after Hammond supposedly drowned.
And they admitted to it.
Nicky stared at Yvonne.
Good Lord, no. Those Quintin Ordykes admit to nothing, as you well know.
Yvonne laughed. They were no different back then. No one knew anything, no one saw anything, and no one gave a damn.
And it was definitely arson.
Well, the broken window and the two empty petrol cans were a bit of a giveaway. Even I didn't have too much trouble working that one out.
They really loved Gordon, didn't they?
Loved him to death, Mum.
Nicky watched Yvonne as she prepared to leave.
You look happy about something.
and considering what's going on here at present, I can't think what it could be.
A wide smile spread across Yvonne's face. I'm off to see old Fred Cartwright's neighbour, ma'am.
Dog walking again.
Actually, I'm going to collect the little fellow.
The grin broadened.
You know that I lost my dear old Holmes last year? Well, that little chap left a very big hole, and not just in my life, in my neighbour's as well.
Nicky knew that Yvonne had dog-shared her beloved canine with Ray, her elderly neighbour. The neighbour cared for him when she was at work, and Yvonne collected him after her shift ended. Yvonne did the exercising and feeding, and Ray did a spot of cuddling and watching TV together when Yvonne was working. Nicky knew that Yvonne missed her old Holmes very much indeed.
I think I see where this is going.
He's called Hobo, and he's a sort of Jack Russell Cross. Not exactly Holmes, but I think that's a good thing. Ray can't wait to meet him.
You're a soft touch, Collins, did you know that?
Yvonne laughed.
I reckon he'll give us back 100-fold more than we give him, ma'am. I don't like living without a dog. The house seems dead somehow.
Nicky loved dogs, but knew that her lifestyle made having one impossible. She nodded.
Good for you, Vonnie. Go pick up your new addition.
Yvonne left, and Nicky was preparing to go when her phone rang.
Sorry to bother you when you were probably trying to escape, but I think you might be pleased that I did.
Rory sounded bright and enthusiastic.
I have just finished comparing the DNA samples that we already have from the various scenes of crime. It's by no means complete, but I have isolated a match that shows up in each one.
He paused.
And Nicky, when we checked the pair of sex chromosomes, we have two X's. It's definitely a female.
Yes!
Nicky punched the air with her free hand.
I've already run a search to see if she's on any database of offenders, but unsurprisingly, there's nothing so far.
He paused again.
And I did a cross-check with Gordon Hammond. Our killer is his daughter, Nicky.
Well done, my friend. Now I have something other than a hunch to pass on at tomorrow morning's meeting. I heard some of D.I. Mercer's team muttering that it was all a load of bollocks. You know, a woman serial killer.
Offends the sensibilities somewhat. Do you know, I read about one woman killer who injected her victim with liquid drain cleaner before she killed her. Now that's not exactly what you'd expect from your average brownie, is it?
I know the one you mean. I was talking about her myself the other day. You should hear what Dr. Foley has to say on the subject.
All far too gruesome for me. I have such a delicate stomach. Now, having delivered the good news, I'll allow you to trot off home, have a peaceful night's rest, and I'll no doubt see you on the morrow.
Nicky hung up the phone, filled with elation. It was Avril Hammond.
Hi, Nicky.
Joseph came in and slumped down into a chair.
You are not going to believe this.
You first, then I have big news for you too.
While you were out, I had a call from Father Aidan.
Oh, hell, not more butchered bunnies.
Not exactly. He saw someone moving about in the graveyard. He was reluctant to call us, but I'd made him promise not to go it alone again.
Who went out there?
I did, with Ben.
Anything?
Not by the time we got there, but there was a bunch of flowers on the spot where Hammond was found.
Flowers? What sort of flowers?
White lilies, Nicky. There was a card with rest in peace printed on it. No signature, and no other message.
Did they look as if they came from a florist? Was there a shop name on the back of the card?
No such luck. They're from the big supermarket on the trading estate, and the back of the card is blank.
Christ, Joseph. Gordon Hammond isn't exactly resting in bloody peace, is he?
Neither is poor Father Aidan, and I think he's wondering what on earth is going to happen next. Any ideas?
Not the foggiest notion, Joseph. Someone doesn't want Gordon to be forgotten, that's for sure.
Then whoever it is doesn't know that Hammond is connected to the recent murders.
Joseph shrugged.
Probably. But whoever it is, they're being a pain in the ass. We have more serious problems to deal with right now.
Nicky told Joseph about Rory's latest findings.
Thank God for that. At least we haven't wasted our time searching for Millie.
A uniformed constable pushed open the door.
Ma'am, sorry to butt in, but PC Steve Royal from West Salterby is in Greenborough General Hospital. He's been attacked.
Nicky and Joseph stared at each other.
Yobs?
Asked Joseph.
No, it was a woman, off her head, screaming and shouting, apparently. She had a right go at the poor bloke's face, by all accounts. Do you want to go over to the hospital? Of course I do, said Nicky. And officer, do we know who the attacker was?
The PC glanced at his notes.
She's called Sarah Archer, ma'am. That's all I know.
Joseph stood up. That was the one Kat and Yvonne interviewed. You know, the strange girl with the teddy bears in the animal sanctuary.
And she's injured PC Royal. Kat reckoned she was away with the fairies, but quite harmless.
Really? Big mistake.
Soon they were at the hospital, looking down at PC Royal. He lay on a trolley, looking pale and uncomfortable. A large dressing covered one side of his face.
Dear Galena, I didn't expect to see you here.
His voice sounded as if he had just left the dentist chair, mouth numb after a massive filling.
I hear you had a run-in with Sarah Archer. She's raving, Mum. You should see what she did to my face.
Can you tell me what happened, Steve? Or is it too painful to talk?
It hurts like hell. But talking doesn't make it any worse. I had a call to a disturbance. It only took me 5 minutes to get there, and I found her rolling in the street, tearing at her clothing and screaming blue murder. A couple of the villagers had tried to help her, but she had fought them off. I've never seen anything like it, Mum. I tried to calm her down, and I just took her arm to stop her hurting herself any further.
He touched the dressing gingerly with one hand.
She came at me like a wild animal. I know it sounds silly, but I actually heard her snarling. I called for backup, and some of the villagers, the doctor, and a couple of younger chaps managed to get a blanket over her and pinned her arms to her sides. They held on to her until a squad car arrived, but then she broke free and our lads didn't manage to catch her until she was halfway to the fen.
Do you know where they've taken her?
She's been sectioned, Mum. They took her to Lambton Psychiatric Hospital. But don't waste your time visiting. I don't think she'll be back in the real world for some time, if ever. Those eyes. She was full of hate and madness. I don't think I'll ever be able to get rid of that sight. And it looks like I may be reminded every time I look in the mirror.
Did they say it will leave a scar, Steve? Joseph asked.
They are talking skin grafts, Sarge.
What? Nicky's eyes opened wide.
I told you she was crazy, Mom. Look.
He gingerly lifted the dressing from his once handsome face. Nicky had to stop herself turning away. The skin was torn in three jagged lines, from just beneath his eye down to his cheekbone. Blood still oozed from the gaping wounds, and something white showed through. She was not sure if this was bone or a tooth. Suddenly a skin graft seemed quite feasible. Nicky spoke gently.
I'm not going to give you the usual platitude, Steve. She's hurt you badly, but the force will get you the best treatment, I promise.
She knew he spent a lot of time at the gym. He took care of himself and was proud of his looks. This would hit him hard. Nicky wondered what the surgeons would be able to do for him.
Thanks for that, Mom. If you'd said I'm sure it's not as bad as it looks, I'd have probably been up for taking a pop at an officer.
Do you know what set her off, Steve? Asked Joseph.
No, Sarge. After she led into me, I kind of lost interest in the whys and wherefores. I think that doctor, Dr. Draper, has an idea about it. He put a temporary dressing on for me while we waited for the ambulance. He was saying something to his wife about seeing her talking to someone, and then she just freaked.
You didn't hear who?
Sorry, Mom.
Forget it, Steve. And you can also forget about the West Saltby sector. As soon as you are fit for duty, I'll make sure that you are transferred back to town. I think you've done your bit for the Cabbage Patch Country.
Thanks, Mom. I'd appreciate that.
Joseph squeezed the young officer's shoulder.
Rather a drastic way of getting a transfer, though, wasn't it?
Probably not the cleverest plan in the world. Oh, shit. It hurts to laugh.
Is there anyone I can phone for you?
No, it's all right. My skipper was in just before you. I've told him to leave it until the morning before he rings my mum. Hopefully I'll look a bit better by then. I don't want to frighten her.
Nicky nodded, thinking that it would be a very long while before the lad looked anything but frightening. The curtain drew back, and two nurses entered the cubicle.
"Theatre is ready for you now, Steve. Sorry you've had to wait so long, but the surgeon's finally sobered up."
"What a relief. Take me away, ladies. See you, ma'am. Wish me luck."
Despite his bravado, there was a slight catch in his voice. Nicky gripped his hand.
"Hang on in there, Steve. We're all rooting for you."
He returned her squeeze, and the nurses wheeled the trolley down the corridor. Nikki glanced at her watch. Probably too late to ring Dr. Draper, but he'd be her first call of the morning. Joseph looked at her.
Can we guess who Sarah Archer had been talking to?
Nikki shook her head slowly.
As if we didn't know.
Chapter 22. As Nikki had anticipated, there was considerable disbelief when she told the murder team of the pathologist's findings. She went on to describe PC Steve Royal's injuries in minute detail.
Should any of you doubting Thomases believe that Avril Hammond is going to be a pushover just because she's a woman, I suggest you consider what happened to Steve. He was attacked by an apparently harmless woman who loves animals and cuddly toys and has the mental age of a 9-year-old. For the last 20-odd years, she's been caring and benignly crazy. The only thing different about her yesterday was that she met Avril Hammond, after which she left Steve looking as if he'd been run over by a lawnmower. The psychiatric hospital would not comment on her condition this morning. They told me that a visit would be inadvisable and a complete waste of our time. So draw your own conclusions as to the state she's in.
Nikki looked around the room. Her expression was glacial.
Are we sure she met Hammond?
Asked one of Jill Mercer's men.
Who else would have that effect, Carpenter? But I'm going to see a witness this morning who will confirm it. If I'm wrong, you'll be the first to know. Now, make sure you're all here tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Dr. Foley is going to give us a talk on the female killer.
The officers dispersed, and Nikki made ready to visit Quinton Odyke.
Joseph, will you stay here and do all you can to source a photograph of Avril Hammond?
Nikki said. Joseph nodded.
Of course, but wouldn't you like some company going back to that awful village?
I'd like not to be going at all.
Nikki shrugged.
But we need to keep up the momentum, and it doesn't need two of us to talk to the doctor and his wife.
Nikki drove into Quinton Odyke, past the pile of rubble that was all that remained of the Hammond home. She wondered why the land had never been sold off and developed. Maybe the tragic events of past decades still clung to the weed-choked debris and had seeped through the mossy paving, down into the crumbling foundations. The doctor's surgery was still open, but there were few patients. Linda Draper looked tired and unwell.
"Dear Galena, do come in. It's more comfy in the study, and John will be through quite shortly. Kettle's on. Tea or coffee?"
"Tea, if it's not too much bother, Mrs. Draper."
When Linda returned with the tea, Nikki asked her if she had seen what had happened the previous afternoon.
"Well, the aftermath, anyway. That poor boy. She scratched his face to ribbons. It was horrible. John did what he could, but he'll probably be scarred for life."
"I saw him in the hospital last night. They're about to operate, first of several, I believe. Mrs. Draper, did you know Sarah Archer?"
"Of course I did.
I've known her for most of her life."
She wiped her brow with the back of her thin hand.
"I don't understand it, Inspector. The poor soul was certainly mentally challenged, but she was like a silly child. Nothing like the howling banshee of yesterday."
"I think your husband may have seen her talking to someone just before her outburst."
"I certainly did, dear Galena."
Dr. Draper came towards her, his hand outstretched.
"Was it a woman by any chance?"
"Yes, it was. And before you ask, I didn't recognise her."
"What did you see exactly?"
"Just Sarah and the woman sitting under the lich gate. They were there for about 5 minutes. The woman must have left because Sarah was alone for a while. Then she started to scream. I was helping my friend Kenny trim up an old conifer and was on a stepladder. I could see her quite clearly."
"Would you recognise the woman again?"
"No. I'd recognise her clothes, but her face was hidden under a floppy hat. Her coat was a long, shapeless affair. I wouldn't even be able to guess at her height, since I never actually saw her leave. 1 minute they were both there, and the next Sarah was alone."
"Have you heard how that young PC Royal is?"
"The hospital cleaned him up last night, but he will have to go to a hospital where they specialise in facial reconstruction. You would never believe that a woman, well, girl, could have done such terrible damage with only her bare hands."
"I thought he'd lost his eye when I first saw him. She only just missed. The bottom lid was torn. How's he taken it, Inspector?"
He was more worried about what his mum would think, poor boy. I guess he was still in shock. He's a good-looking lad, and probably a little vain. I just hope they managed to do a good job on him.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, dear Galina, you seem to know already the last person Sarah spoke to was a woman. Do you know who she was?
Unless I'm way off course. It was Avril Hammond. There was a crash, and Inda Draper stood rooted to the spot, her cup and saucer in shards around her feet.
Linda?
The doctor rushed to his wife's side and gently led her to a chair. He turned to Nicky and spoke through clenched teeth.
If that was meant to be a shock tactic of some kind, I hope you are satisfied with the result.
Nicky had not expected anything of the sort. She bit her lip. Linda touched her husband's arm.
Please, John. It wasn't the inspector's fault. I was just being silly. We've always known she could still be alive. It was just a shock to hear it, that's all. I'm sorry, Inspector.
She stood up, and brushing off her husband's objections, went to fetch a dustpan. Nicky apologized to the doctor. John Draper ran a hand through his hair.
Inspector, forgive my rudeness. You didn't live through the awful torment that family caused this small village. So, of course, you wouldn't understand. My wife was terrified of Gordon Hammond. And no matter what she says, we both believed that Avril was lying in a shallow grave somewhere on the marsh.
He sat down heavily.
You really believe that I was looking at Avril Hammond yesterday?
Yes, I do. We also believe, and have some evidence to back it up, that a woman was responsible for the 3 recent Greenborough murders, as well as the death of Gordon. She may also have driven 2 people to suicide.
She paused.
And now she has had Sarah Archer committed to a psychiatric hospital. Dr. Draper lowered his head into his hands.
Dear God, you really think that she slaughtered her own father?
Yes, I believe she did.
Lord have mercy. And now she has come back, and is following in his footsteps.
If she is responsible for the deaths in Greenborough, then she has already gone much further than her father ever did.
How many others are going to die because of something that happened a lifetime ago?
The doctor seemed to have aged 10 years in as many minutes.
It was bad enough back then. My wife almost collapsed with nervous exhaustion. Lord knows what will happen this time.
We are a lot better placed these days, Dr. Draper. Technology, science, forensics. We'll catch her. Nicky stood up. And once again, I really didn't mean to upset your wife. It was thoughtless of me to speak so tactlessly. Thanks again for your help. I'll keep in touch.
Please do, Inspector. And I am also sorry for my rudeness.
Dr. Draper saw her to the door.
They are a rum lot here, all right. But not much gets past them. If I hear anything that might be of use to you, I'll contact you. You can be sure of that.
Before going back to her car, Nicky walked down to the lich gate. She wanted to take a look at the place where madness had overtaken the hapless Sarah Archer. Nicky could tell from the scattering of sweet wrappers and used gum that children still used it as a meeting place. Nicky sat for a while, wondering why their killer would consider poor Sarah to be any kind of threat. Kat and Yvonne had mentioned the name Hammond when they interviewed her, and there had been no flicker of recognition. Whatever had happened to young Sarah in that pillbox would probably have stayed deep within her if she had not met with Avril Hammond. Nicky took a deep breath. Sitting outside a churchyard and pondering would not resolve the case. She had promised the super that she and Jill Mercer would begin formally interviewing some of the Briar Patch women. She strode back to her vehicle and headed back across fen and farmland to Greenborough. Kat greeted her with a smile.
"Hello, Mum. Got a bit of news for you. One of our Quintin kids is on remand in Lincoln Prison. Avril might have a spot of bother getting at him there.
Terry Harvey, I presume. Oh, well, at least that's one we won't have to spend money on watching. Even so, I give Lincoln a ring and tell them to monitor his visiting orders very carefully," Nicky said.
Kat stopped smiling. "Are you serious, Mum?"
"Deadly serious. 5 minutes was all it took with Sarah Archer. How long do you think she'd need with a nutter like Terry Harvey? By the way, have you seen Jill Mercer around?"
"She's in with the superintendent,
They're trying to get some extra manpower. We need help with all these background searches. The work gets boring after a while. If you want a break, Cat, why not take Yvonne and have another try at these old buddies of Averill's in West Saltaby? You know, the one she used to hang out with.
Yeah, why not?
Cat pushed her chair back.
We'll drop in on that old school caretaker again, too. He might just remember something more. At least he was willing to speak to us, which was a very refreshing change for Quintin Clamsville. I'll get hold of the prison and then grab Yvonne.
Nicky was on her way to see Jill Mercer when Dave waylaid her in the corridor.
Sorry, Mum, but I've got something here that you might like to look at.
Dave was clutching a sheaf of newspaper clippings.
Ben gave me these. They're the ones you found by Fred Cartwright's bed. He thought you might want them back. The thing is, I think I found why Fred kept them. Look, this one. Remains of a cat found nailed to a tree close to the church of St. Thomas. And here, the reward offered for the return of a missing dog.
Dave pointed out several other small ads or short articles, all referring to missing, mutilated or dead animals. He ran a hand through his thinning hair.
I cannot think why that old man would want to keep them, but I'm certain that's what they are.
You know, when I pick them up, they're with a large plain envelope. I assume that's where he kept them. I wonder now if he intended to send them to someone.
What, like blackmail?
I don't know. Or perhaps he wanted someone else to see them. Dave, make copies of all these cuttings and add the dates. Highlight the relevant articles on the copies, then bring one set to me and take another out to Dr. Draper. He might just be able to fathom out who Fred Cartwright would want to share this knowledge with.
Okay, Mum.
Dave turned to leave, then stopped.
You don't think he was going to show them to his daughter, do you?
Perhaps, but I don't think so. The envelope was new. He'd obviously kept those old papers somewhere safe for years. Why put them in a brand new envelope if you weren't going to post them? Whatever, well done, Dave, for spotting it. I don't know how it'll help us, but it's another puzzle solved.
Thanks, Mum.
Dave left.
Nicky, sorry to have kept you.
Jill Mercer came out of the DCI's office.
Good news. I think we've managed to convince HQ to give us some manpower from the other divisions.
She fell into step beside Nicky. Nicky smiled.
A few more flat feet on the job certainly won't go amiss. Now, who's first on our list?
Zina Paris. She said she'd be in the shop all afternoon, so we'll kick off with her. Then, I'm sorry, but I have to get back here. I've got a couple of people calling in to see me about the Lawson girl. If they don't take too long, perhaps we can visit Professor Anna Blunt afterwards.
They walked to the car.
I've upped the watch on the remaining victims, Nicky. Lucy Clark is staying with her manageress, who lives over the calf, and Uniform are keeping a careful eye on them. PC Kieran Streeter has taken over Steve Royal's beat at West Salterton. He and two other officers are watching Peter Lee's house round the clock. Delia Roberts has her company security men with her while she is at work, and we have officers on duty outside her flat. Skegness Sector are looking out for Sally King and her family, so with HMP Lincoln kindly looking after Terry Harvey for us, we can't do any more. They've all been warned that they may be in danger. Not easy considering the fragile state of some of their heads,
Jill said. Nicky eased the Land Rover out into the main road.
Now, what do you know about Zina Paris? Precious little. She's owned the antique shop for about 5 years and lives in the apartment above it. Seems to have come here from London. Her past is rather hazy, so we'll clear that up today. She has not yet admitted to being friends with Madeline Prospero, and yet you say they go back a long way.
So I'm told, and I've also been told that Madeline had a secret admirer. Zina should know who that was.
Right. Is she, seeing anyone that you know of?
Jill asked.
Ah, well, today I was given a list of unofficial liaisons between the Bra Patch women. Zina doesn't even get a mention. Another source tells me she's supposed to be a bit of a goer, so make of that what you will.
Lord, I'm confused already.
Wait till you see the list.
Spare me. I'll look at it later when we get back to the station, and I've got a strong black coffee in my hand.
Nicky parked directly outside Paris Antiques. Jill peered through the window.
Phew, pricey!
And guarded by a Rottweiler called Harriet Page. She's the manageress.
She's not on the Briar Patch membership list, is she?
Funnily enough, no, although she comes across as butch as hell. She frightened the life out of me when I first saw her.
Jill pushed open the door. No Rottweiler this time. Instead, they were greeted by the tall, willowy woman from Spooky's photograph. Nikki took her hand and was surprised at the strength and the slender fingers.
"I'm Zena Paris. Do come through to my office."
Zena stood aside and indicated an open door at the back of the showroom. The office obviously doubled as a stockroom, and they were shown to two rather splendid chairs in front of an ornate desk. Jill lowered herself gingerly onto her plush brocade seat, and Zena smiled.
"Please, they're just reproductions. Can I get you a drink?"
They declined, and she eased her elegant frame into an ornate carver chair behind the desk.
"Mrs. Paris!"
"Miss Paris, Detective Inspector, but call me Zena, please."
"My apologies, Miss, Zena. I explained on the phone that this is about a murder inquiry. We've spoken to you once about Louise Lawson, but today we'd like to ask about Madeline Prospero."
Jill looked directly into Zena's eyes.
"We believe you knew her, although you omitted to tell us that before."
Zena looked at Nikki. Nobody spoke. Then Jill quietly said,
"We could charge you with perverting the course of justice if you were found to be withholding evidence."
Zena stared down at the oak desk. She seemed to be going over her options. She sighed deeply.
"I chose not to speak about Madeline, because I thought it was irrelevant to your investigation."
"Perhaps we should have been the ones to decide that, Zena."
Jill's tone was cool.
"Madeline had a very difficult existence, Detective Inspector Mercer. Misguided loyalty to her family and their business compelled her to live a lie, and it troubled her conscience. With me and other like-minded friends, she was able to be herself."
"At the Briar Patch?" asked Nikki softly.
"I wondered how long it would be before you betrayed your friend's confidences, Inspector Galena."
Zena almost spat this out. Before Nikki could respond, Jill turned on her.
"How dare you sit in judgment on someone who is trying to save your precious friend's lives? You are supposedly intelligent women, but in relation to this killer, you don't seem to have a brain cell between you. Wasn't young Louise Lawson being sliced to ribbons enough for you? Or Madeline being butchered? Oh, remind me, she was your friend, wasn't she?"
Nikki laid a hand on her arm. "Jill, that's enough, okay?" Jill bit hard on the side of her thumb and looked away from Zena. Zena was deathly pale, and her long, thin hand shook.
"What do you want to know?"
"Anything that could help us, Zena."
Nikki leaned forward. "Listen, I don't want anyone to suffer because of this investigation. I've seen plenty of my friends do the guilt trip, live the lie. A lot of us, straight or gay, have bought the bloody T-shirt when it comes to hiding our true feelings. I've seen people in emotional turmoil, Zena, and I can assure you that you do not have a monopoly on suffering. The thing is, there is a killer out there that has you and yours in her sights. Surely it's better to tell the truth than to have to bury your only daughter, like Maria Lawson."
"Her sights?"
"Yes, we suspect the killer to be a woman."
"Excuse me." Zena got up and almost staggered to the door.
"Harriet, get some coffees, please. Strong, if you would."
She closed the door and sat back down. When she spoke, her voice was flat and unemotional.
"I met Madeline in London. She was at an auction selling some furniture for her father. I was interested in what she had and purchased a few bits from my shop in the Fulham Road. We got talking, exchanged cards, and met for lunch the following week. That was many years ago. It was Maddie who told me about this shop when it came onto the market. I was sick of the big smoke, so I came to live in Greenborough. I was surprised to find a thriving lesbian community in such a small place, but there you are." She shrugged. "I went for the occasional drink at Sammy's bar, and later, with several other professional women, we founded the Briar Patch Club. It has flourished. We've helped numerous women, gay and straight, with career and business problems. We've raised money for charity, and we've supported each other through rough times. The club worked for us all." There was a rap on the door, and Harriet Page entered, carrying a tray of drinks. She looked anxiously at her boss and asked if everything was all right. Assured that it was, she left. "I knew about Maddie's problems, so I introduced her to the club. She had to be very careful, and right up to her death she managed to keep her sexuality from everyone but a select few." She sighed heavily. "Were you in love with her, Zena?"
Zena shook her head sadly.
"No. She was my dearest friend. But Maddie was more like a sister. I protected and nurtured her, but I wasn't in love. You see, I've been with Harriet since long before I met Maddie. Almost 15 years now, and yes, we both see other people from time to time." And who did Madeline see? Asked Nicky. She had one or two casual affairs, just for the sex and a bit of fun. She couldn't afford to commit to a steady relationship. She had too much to lose. She saw a woman called Victoria a few times, and I think she may have had a bit of a fling with Cindy Stamford, but nothing heavy. Did she tell you about her secret admirer? Zena sat up in her ornate chair. How the hell did you know about that? You're very effective, Grapevine. Zena's eyes narrowed. Someone was sending her gifts. At first we thought it was one of her male admirers. Then we weren't so sure. It went on for about a month and then stopped. I suppose whoever it was got bored, or got the message that Maddie wasn't interested. Jill suddenly came alive again. If she let them know she wasn't interested, she must have known who it was, surely. They wanted to meet, but she never went.
Are you sure about that?
She would have told me.
Did you ever have any suspects? One of the other women, perhaps?
No, never. Sure, some of them fancied her, which was hardly surprising. She was pretty, feminine, and very well off. But they were open about it.
Was she frightened by the gifts?
She was more concerned about the consequences, if the admirer turned out to be a woman, but not really frightened. Zena, do you have any idea who killed Madeline Prospero, or why? Nicky's eyes were ice cold. If I had, I would have come to you. The club voted to keep quiet, but believe me, I want the killer caught as much as anyone. I just didn't want to be the one to betray Madeline's secrets. Lastly, can you think of anything that would have connected Madeline's death to that of Louise? Nothing, other than the fact that Maria Lawson knew them both. There was nothing more to say. Back in the car, Jill apologized for her outburst, but said the stupidity of the Briar Patch woman was beyond her. Why would they refuse to help in the hunt for a murderer who had killed two of their own? Nicky wondered why Spooky hadn't mentioned that Zena and Harriet Page were partners. She obviously knew them both well.
What? You are joking, aren't you? She had to be taking the piss. Zena and Harriet, never!
Spooky said. Her reaction surprised Nicky.
That's what she said. 15 years together. But they weren't entirely monogamous. Well, I don't know what to say to you. I really had no idea. Perhaps they're not, but she wants us to believe they are.
Spooky threw up her hands.
But why? Pass. But I think Zena knows a lot more than she's letting on.
Nicky gazed around the computer room at the boxes of new equipment.
How's all this going?
Really well. I should have most of it operational by tomorrow.
Do you have an aging program? Like, if I gave you a kid's photo, could you generate an image of what she would look like 30 years on?
Sure. You're talking about an age progression tool. I can progress from 1 to 80 if you want. It's fast, too.
And would it be fairly accurate?
It works remarkably well. In fact, when we did trials, our rendered photos were often confused with current ones. Even their families were unable to reliably distinguish between the two. Spooky gave her a worried look.
You were thinking of the killer?
Nicky nodded.
Joseph is trying to source a photo of her as a child. If he finds one, have you got the appropriate software here?
I will by tomorrow.
And you said it was fast. Is 30 seconds fast enough for you?
Brilliant. I'd better leave you to get on. She smiled at her friend.
Are there any more Briar Patch meetings coming up?
Not officially, but I know most of the women will be at Sylvia Caulfield's Greenborough Hospice charity night. They're having a silly auction, you know, bidding for ridiculous items. They were going to cancel it, but the members said they refused to let this threat control their lives, so it's going ahead.
Why, do you still want to talk to them en masse?
No, I've just thought of something, though. Nicky suddenly seemed absorbed in a mark on her trousers.
It's nothing. I'll let you get on. Bye for now.
Outside the computer room, Nicky took out her mobile phone and made a call. Then she got into her 4x4 and drove out of the station. A smoky haze drifted across the road in front of the car. Kat glanced at Yvonne.
West Saltby looks like an old-fashioned picture postcard, doesn't it? With that church spire and those picturesque cottages nestled together. It's so peaceful.
Yvonne snorted.
Sorry to disillusion you, but this part of the fen is anything but bloody peaceful.
Leaning heavily on a gnarled and twisted walking stick, old Sid Wilson was endeavouring to pull a few dead plants from his window box.
"Nasty frost last night, lasses. Had me petunias, it did. See?"
Yvonne picked up the carrier bag at the old man's feet and helped to pull out the blackened plants. She asked him how he was.
Not too bad. Not too bad. Actually, I'm glad you've come out here again.
Sid placed a handful of leaves in the bag she held open for him.
I lost that card that the officer gave me. The one with the name and number. See, I was talking to my neighbour yesterday, and she mentioned that our post lady's son was staying with her for a while. I couldn't place the lad at first. Then it came back to me. He was a long-haired, grumpy misery of a boy, and he had a bit of a crush on young Admiral Hammond. I'd forgotten all about that when I saw the detectives before.
Cat brightened. Is he still here?
Saw him yesterday. Of course he's all grown up now, but he didn't look no happier.
What's his name, Sid? Asked Yvonne.
James Cooper. His mum lives in that little row of cottages just past the post office. Meadowlands, it's called.
Yvonne recognised the name. If he was the Jimmy Cooper she had pulled in several times, he was more than just miserable. He was downright unpleasant. Drugs offences mainly, and he hadn't been averse to a spot of burglary, if she remembered correctly.
Maybe I'll go and say hello. I'm sure he'll be pleased to see me again.
Never heard of her, Jimmy said.
That's bullshit, and you know it, Jimmy. You had the hots for her when she was probably still underage,
Yvonne said.
Never did.
Look, lad, it's not you that's in the cat for a change. If you tell me what you know about this, I may just be able to help you next time you get brought kicking and screaming into Greenborough Nick.
Jimmy shrugged his shoulders. His leather jacket creaked.
Who'd you say you're looking for?
Avril Hammond, thought to be dead donkeys years ago.
Oh, yeah. The one whose dad was a perv.
Excellent. Your memory seems to be returning.
Cat glared at him.
And you fancied the knickers off her, right?
Me and most of the others. She'd do it for the price of a bag of chips, she would.
Cat looked shocked.
She was only a kid.
Really? You do surprise me.
Yvonne frowned at him.
Jimmy, are you making this up?
Sorry to tell you this, WPC Collins, but Avril Hammond would shag anything with a pulse. And believe me, she knew what she was doing, all right. She took the virginity of half the West Salterby boys, and most likely some of the girls before she disappeared.
And can you help me with anything about her disappearance?
I had nothing to do with that. Her dad probably caught her with her knickers down once too often and finished her off. There were some weird rumours afterwards, but she never came back, so I guess she's dead, like they said.
And these rumours?
Jimmy was silent for a moment.
Back then I had this mate. We used to do a bit of business together.
Cat just stopped herself mentioning drugs. Well, this bloke, he liked sowing his oats. In fact, he had a bit of a problem in that department, you know, like he couldn't get enough.
Jimmy gave Cat a lascivious look. Suddenly he's all smiles. Reckon he's found a bit of stuff that'll put out for him whenever he fancies it. When I asked him who she was, he clammed up on me. Said even if he did tell me, I'd never believe it. He never did, before you ask.
And you thought it was Avril?
Dunno what I thought, really. Whoever she was, she wore my mate out. And that must have taken some doing. I just didn't know why I was bothering with being so secretive.
Who is this guy? Can I speak to him?
Cat took out her notebook.
If you know a good psychic, he overdosed last year.
Cat swore silently, but James Cooper was still talking.
You could have a word with his brother, though. I'm sure he knew what was going on. He lives in Greenborough, in a terraced house down the back of the football ground. Meadville Terrace. Don't know the number. Name's Darren Drew. His brother was Nathan Drew.
Thanks, Jimmy. If we ever see you again in our professional capacity, we'll remember how helpful you've been.
You do that.
The massive tower of the parish church, known as the Lighthouse of the Fens, dominated the market square. Avoiding the kamikaze cyclists, Cat made her way around the one-way system that eventually led to the football ground. She left her Ford in the potholed car park of a discount store, and they crossed the road to Meadville Terrace. It was after 5, and Cat hoped they would catch Darren Drew at home. Drew's wife looked at their warrant cards and put a hand to her heart.
He's straight now, officers. Has been for years. He just went through a bad patch with his brother Dan and all, honest. What do you want him for?
Yvonne smiled at her.
It's all right, Mrs. Drew. He's not in trouble. We just want to speak to him.
After much cajoling and reassuring, They were finally shown into a tiny sitting room with garish curtains and the largest widescreen TV Cat had ever seen. Here they had to repeat their assurances, and it was several minutes before Cat managed to get to the object of their visit.
"Darren, we've had reason to believe that Avril Hammond didn't die out on the marshes as people thought. In actual fact, she ran away. We've been told that she may have been Nathan's girlfriend. Any ideas on that?"
Darren sniffed. His misshapen, oft-broken nose twitched.
"He did say something about it, D.C. Cullen, but he was off his head most of the time, and I never knew whether to believe him or not. Lied like a snake, he did."
"Did you ever see her?"
"A few times, I suppose."
He looked uncomfortable.
"Did she come on to you?"
Darren glanced towards the door. His wife was clattering crockery in the kitchen.
"That's why I only saw her a few times. She was evil, D.C. Cullen. She knew I was married, but that never stopped her. I think it made it even more fun for her."
"How old was she, Darren?"
"She told Nathan she was 19, but I think she was a bit younger than that."
He looked towards the door again and spoke quietly.
"I called in one day. I had a back door key to his gaff, and he'd asked to borrow some money. He was in trouble as usual. Anyway, I thought they were both out. I went into the kitchen and stuck a £20 note in the cutlery drawer for him. Then I heard this noise, so I went into the hall. The bedroom door was wide open. My brother was buck naked, tied to the bed, face down with his legs wide apart. And she was doing something to him. I don't know what exactly. The curtains were drawn and a lamp was on, and it glinted on something in her hand. It could have been metal or maybe glass."
He swallowed hard.
"Do you know what? She was enjoying herself so much she never even saw me. I went outside and nearly vomited in the bushes."
Cat felt slightly nauseous herself.
"Did you tell him what you'd seen?"
"How could I? I asked him if he was happy with her living there. He never gave me a straight answer, and he died a few days later. So who knows?"
"What happened to her?"
Darren looked at her.
"Can I get into trouble over this?"
"No, why should you? You are helping me, aren't you?"
"Maybe I know something else. But if I tell you it never came from me, is that a deal?"
Cat glanced at Yvonne.
"We can't make deals, Darren. Just tell us. It could help bring a killer to justice."
"She's killed someone?"
Darren looked shocked.
"We think she did, yes."
"I can't tell you in front of the wife."
Cat thought for a moment.
"What do you do for a living, Darren?"
"I'm a mechanic, why?"
"Then come to my car with me. I had a bit of trouble with it on the way here, okay?"
Cat raised an eyebrow.
"Oh, right. Yeah. Hang on."
He hauled himself up from the couch and called out to his wife.
"Just gonna take a look at the copper's mortar, all right. Back in 10.
A disembodied voice called back.
"Don't be long. Supper's nearly ready."
Outside, a misty rain had started to fall. In the confines of Cat's Ford, Darren's clothes gave off an unpleasant smell. A mix of engine oil, fried food, and stale tobacco.
"After Nathan died, I decided it was Avril Hammond who did it. He called her Cookie. Just that, no full name. One day, when he was half sober and only a bit high, he told me that when he met her, she was living in a squat. She was on the game trying to earn enough money to go to London. She had aspirations, so she said."
He rubbed at a greasy stain on his jeans.
"She had run away with another girl from a village close to hers. They were with these town kids in a squat here in Greenborough. They made a living sleeping with all and sundry. Nathan said he really liked her, and her sexual appetite was fine by him. He'd always been a randy little git."
He wiped an oil-stained hand across his eyes.
"Thing is, she used him up, hooked him on drugs, sold his stuff, and took every penny he had. For all I know, she might have given him that fatal dose."
He swallowed loudly.
"I was younger then. I was so angry I would have killed her myself if I'd ever seen her again. I looked for her too, believe me."
"She disappeared?"
"Yep. Off the face of the earth. I searched for months, D.C. Cullen, and I did come up with one thing. It did me no good, but it may help you. She moved to another squat, over in King's Lynn. By the time I discovered where, she'd been long gone. But for the price of a line, they told me what she did. She returned to the Doss house one night and found that one of the druggies had gone too far and overdosed. She took everything the girl owned, a birth certificate, a student's ID and a crucifix. She told the other squatters it was her ticket to a new life. Everyone believed she stole the girl's identity. Trouble was, no one knew who the dead girl was. She called herself Heeb. That's all anyone knew. And the trail stopped there.
Darren, you never knew for certain that she was Avril Hammond, did you?
No proof, no. I just knew it was her. Nathan told me things, little things, but they all pointed to it being the missing girl.
You never thought about going to the police?
Asked Yvonne softly. My brother was in serious trouble and I tried to look out for him. Because of Nathan, the old Bill and I were never on the best of terms. I decided to let sleeping dogs lie. Now will you please forget who told you this?
Darren Drew looked from one to the other of them. Kat stared out through the rain-smeared windscreen.
As I read it, there's nothing concrete here.
She looked at him.
If I can keep your name out of it, Darren, I will. But I may need to see you again. Is that all right?
Yeah, I told you this much, so why not? Just don't let on to my missus.
Darren closed the car door and trundled away. Kat called him back.
Don't mind me asking, but did she, Avril, Cookie, whoever she was, did you and she ever...
Darren's face darkened, and then he seemed to slump.
As I said, just don't let on to my missus. This is part of my life that I've shared with no one.
Then, as Kat reached for the ignition, he called back softly.
Just the once, DC Cullen. And it was like rape. I felt raped.
Chapter 23
Sir, I don't give a flag. Oh, this makes me so damned angry. Surely people's lives must come first. Isn't that what being a police officer is all about? You can't reduce the protection. Those people will be sitting targets for our killer.
Nicky fumed.
It's out of my hands, Nicky. Until we get our reinforcements, which hopefully will be tomorrow or the day after, we have to do the day-to-day work as well as the murder inquiry. You will still have officers posted there. We just can't afford 2 men 24 hours a day. That's all.
Greg Whittle replied.
Great. Just great. There's only 4 of them, for heaven's sake. Perhaps it would be more cost-effective if I stuck them all together in a cell and charged them bloody rent until the killer's captured.
The corners of Greg's mouth twitched. It's all very well for him to smile, thought Nicky. These battles over the budget were almost a daily routine by now. But this one was serious.
Sir? Ma'am? I'm really sorry to interrupt, but I have something on Avril Hammond.
Looking relieved, the superintendent slipped away, and Nicky glared at Kat Cullen.
Nice timing, Kat. You may have saved his life there. Well, his balls, anyway. Okay, let's adjourn to the grotto.
Joseph and Dave met them at the door to their murder room.
Got something, Nicky. Not vital, but another piece in the puzzle.
Then come and join us, said Nicky. I have news, and our cat has some as well, so let's party.
Kat and Yvonne's information surprised them. Her peers saw Avril as the village bike, whereas the adults thought her a sweet, intelligent child. Nicky frowned.
According to Dr. Foley, severely abused or disturbed kids often become promiscuous. But from what you say, Kat, she seems to have been little less than a prostitute.
My source is a rather dubious character, but this time I do believe him. He was quite upset when he told us. Cried real tears. Unless I'm getting soft.
Did Drew say when all this happened?
Joseph was scribbling in his notebook.
Yes, and he gave me the address of the squat where the addict died.
We'd better check with the Kingsland police to see if the body was ever identified. There is no telling how many times Avril's changed her name since, but at least we might find out what she was calling herself then.
Nicky looked at Joseph.
Will you check up on that?
Yes, I'll get onto it ASAP. Our news is rather small potatoes compared with Kat's, I'm afraid. It's about St. Augustine's churchyard. Do you remember the warden, the big Scot by the name of Woodall? Well, last night he went out there to take some cleaning stuff for Father Aidan. He saw a vehicle parked up in the dark by the back gates with its lights off, so he watched it for a while. He couldn't see the driver, but when Woodall got out to ask them what they were doing, they drove off like a bat out of hell. Thing is, it was a red Toyota pickup, and yes, I know they're pretty popular around here, but Cyril Roberts had a red pickup truck out at his cottage on the Fen, didn't he?
Joseph said.
And he used to be a butcher, said Yvonne. And as Kat said, the dead bunnies had been dissected by an expert.
Time to have another word with him, I guess.
Nicky puffed out her cheeks.
But if it is him, what the hell is he up to? Why not come right out and tell us what's on his mind? Why fart around with half the cast of Watership Down and a bunch of Tesco lilies? Perhaps even he doesn't know why he's doing it.
Cat mused. Bollocks. You said it, Cat Colin, not me. You are getting soft.
Cat grinned sheepishly.
Check him out anyway. Ben, would you attend to that?
Nicky said.
He nodded. Certainly. What's your news, ma'am?